All right, everybody, this is CJ Wilson coming to you with Stephen McClurg, and this is the Bitcoin Bottom Line. We are going to discuss in today's episode President Biden's executive order and what do we do about it as Bitcoiners. So, Stephen, let's kick it off. You have a really cool beanie on.
I love my beanie. I think we have the best beanies in the whole industry. Not only do we have the tallest guys in all of crypto, we also have the best beanies.
And then we're also being joined by Josh Olszewicz. How do we say it?
That's fine. Yeah, Olszewicz. Carpe Noctem.
I was
so fine
close.
People know who I am. Don't you worry. Oh, that's okay. That's fine.
So I guess the big news is I believe it's been about 2 months, we've been getting teased that there is going to be some sort of crypto executive order. And as a result of that, I think a lot of people were, you know, pulling coins off exchanges, coin joining, maybe selling some stuff, maybe just, you know, trying to take a cautious approach. This is obviously during the whole Ukraine situation. And then last night, I guess, or early, Yellen's comments on the executive order get leaked that cryptocurrency, you know, has some sort of sanction evasion component or something like that, and that's a deal. And then today it comes out and it's a total nothing burger. And then the price just rockets up. I mean, Bitcoin's like, oh, hey, back to the party, guys. Music starts again. And here we are back above like 42 or something like that as I'm saying this. So I think we had dipped down to maybe like 37 or something like that in terms of price, just because people were uncertain. And in a weird way, I guess, is this good or bad that we have these sort of news cycle reactions, Stephen? Like, is this the sign of a mature market?
Well, you know, first of all, anytime that there's a sideways market and the macroeconomic perspective isn't great, but markets haven't really gone down yet, the news cycle completely controls the price and people are all nervous Nellies. They're all trading around what they think is news because they're waiting for the big news, right? I mean, this happens every time there's a super cycle, you know, 10 years or 7 to 10 year cycle in equities. Mm-hmm. And if you remember back in 2007, right, everybody knew that the market was overheated, but there would be bits of news and the markets would skyrocket and then other bits of news. And then they would come down 2% and up 2%, mm-hmm. down 2% until finally, you know, the big news, right? You know, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, and of course, you know, the whole liquidity crisis happened. But anytime that you're right on the edge of one of those cycles, this happens. And we're like that right now in the overall economy. You have rates at zero. You've got the Fed that's sort of forced to think about inflation right now. Mm-hmm. Inflation is a big problem. So, I mean, I live in the South now, and usually gas prices are much cheaper there. I just filled up my tank for $4.09, and that wasn't, you know, that was just regular, right? And I know you've been posting things, CJ, on the West Coast where prices are generally higher. I mean, mm-hmm. What are you putting into your supercars out there?
So I saw $7.25 gas in Hollywood 2.5 days ago. Yesterday I got gas. I just drove by that station and it was like a red light. I was like, oh my God, it's like tourism, you know, it's like gas station tourism now. But what's really weird is there is a big discrepancy between like an on-brand and off-brand form of gas. And I wonder if they're just like pouring some liquid death into that 87 octane or something like that. They're like, ooh, sparkly. But yeah, I paid $6.20 for 91 octane. I was kind of laughing when I did it because it reminded me a couple of months ago, I put a Twitter poll out there and I say, what happens first? 600 million Bitcoin users, $200,000 price, or $10 gas? And in my mind, I was like, $10 gas is happening for sure. But so many people are like, $10 gas, that's crazy. And I'm like, well, hey, here we are at $6 or $7 gas in California. So we're not that far away, whereas we are a long way away from those other numbers. And I think there is a correlation between Bitcoin users and Bitcoin price. But yeah, I think overall, I agree with you. I think we're so sensitive because we always have our devices in our hands, you know, that we're getting bombarded by information all the time. So when there's bad information out there, You know, it takes a lot of effort to refute it, but people react like right away to the bad news, right? Like Josh, before we were talking, there is like a refutation of bad news or bullshit, you know, commentary. There is a sort of a ratio there or something like that, right?
Yeah, the energy required to refute bullshit is often 10 times greater than the energy needed to create it.
Right. So is that, I think, is that Brandolini's law? I think I looked that up and Googled that on the side. So I believe it's called Brandolini's law, which, so as a Bitcoiner, you need to know the Cantillon effect, you know, which is the proximity to the money printer. You need to know about Brandolini's law. You need to know about what's the other one? The waves, the guy that does, it's like the, it's an investing thing, Stephen, you would know. The
waves. You mean hyperwaves?
No, not hyperwaves. No, easy there, Dan Held. No. I'm saying, yeah, exactly, with hyperwaves. No, but I'm saying there's like the chop effect of as the markets kind of go. Anyways, whatever. So the point is that there's a lot of people that are attacking Bitcoin right now. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, one thing you can't refute is the price of gasoline, right? I mean, you know, we talked about it. Josh, what's the price on the East Coast, by the way?
If I drove, I would know, but I work from home, never leave, honestly. So I couldn't really tell you what it is here.
That's great.
Are you getting hit with extra delivery fees on your food then? I guess that's the question.
No. I don't even do any of that. I just, I'm very much a homebody. But no, I haven't seen the prices here.
Well, I mean, look, I'll go down a bit of a rabbit trail, but this is an important rabbit trail, right? And trust me, I'll tie it back to something important that's significant happening right now. But you know where the continental divide is, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason why oil prices or gas prices are higher on the West Coast than it is on the East Coast, there's a couple of different reasons, but one is pipeline activity, right? When most gasoline is being produced, and I'm calling it the East Coast, but it's really between Oklahoma and Texas, right? Mm-hmm. The cost to pipe to the cost to send it to the West Coast because of the Continental Divide is much higher. So a lot of the gasoline that is being refined and distributed on the West Coast happens in, you know, on the West Coast, right? Mm-hmm. Plus there's also extra taxes that California and a few other states put on it. So you're always going to have higher prices there. And I agree with you. You are going to see $10 gas in California. Mark mm-hmm. my words. You're going to see it soon.
Yeah.
Because this hasn't ended. But the other important thing is we put all these sanctions on Russia weeks ago, and it really took, it was really this week that there's like, oh, by the way, we put all these economic sanctions on Russia, but now we're also not going to take their you know, oil and gas. Or, well, wait a minute, like, I thought you already put sanctions on Russia, but now you're deciding that you're not going to, you know, buy their oil and gas. And by the way, in Western Europe, they're still purchasing Russian oil and gas, right? Mm-hmm. But all that being said, you know, as far as oil coming to the United States, Russia accounts for much less than 3% of all U.S. oil. Most of it's produced here, first of all, and then the rest of it is imported, you know, from the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So Russian oil shouldn't have that much of effect,
right, on price. Oil. Yeah, on the price, it should have nowhere near a 40 to 50% effect like we've seen in the last 12 months, right? I mean, that's totally, totally bonkers to assume that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And you were talking about, you know, different laws of economics. If you remember from, you know, college days, Adam Smith's three laws of economics, right? The law of supply and demand, mm-hmm. the law of self-interest, and the law of competition. Okay.
Yep.
So the law of supply and demand isn't really at play here because there's not that much less supply cutting off Russia. The supply is the same.
Yep.
The demand side's the same. it really has to do with inflation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why prices are shooting up higher than they should have on a reactionary note is really the law of self-interest.
Yep.
You know, there's an opportunity to charge more, therefore they will.
Yeah.
Right. And law of competition. There's not much outside competition here. So anyway, all that being said, the price of oil that we're seeing today was a reactionary effect to the Ukraine-Russian conflict, but it was where the price of oil was already headed due to inflation.
Yeah.
So I estimate the fair value of oil at somewhere between, let's just say somewhere between $130 and $150 a barrel.
Mm.
And we're about at the low range of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as always, when there's high inflation, when there's supply chain issues, when there's events like the war, you'll always have a swing to the other side. So it's possible that we're going to see oil prices between $150 and $180 a barrel. Now, mm-hmm. what does that do to the price of gasoline? Well, it drives up gasoline to $10 a barrel. I mean, sorry, $10 a gallon in California.
Yeah. And
probably, you know, places like the South, which the South is usually cheaper because it's closer to the source, right? It's closer to Houston, it's closer to Cushing, closer to the refineries. And so we'll probably see, you know, if we're seeing $4 now, we'll probably see something like $6
right.
in the near term.
Yeah. I think, but the knock-on effect of gas and oil prices as you have to transport everything, because we haven't figured out 3D printing food yet, and we haven't figured out teleportation, right? So we still need to move things around. And unless we're suddenly going to start going heavily on trains and then using all this coal to move trains around, they're still going to continue to use big rigs for the majority of the, you know, intercontinental transport. And I think, you know, like you said, back to the Adam Smith's laws, if you sort of have like a triangle, right? And if one of those legs goes down, then the other one goes up. It's just like, because there's always this balance. So as it tips around, if you eliminate competition, then self-interest goes to the moon, mm-hmm. you know? And if you eliminate supply, then, you know, then demand goes up almost as like a psychological reaction, because self-interest is tied with demand, right? So for the good itself, and then that creates competition between the consumers, not necessarily competition between the sellers. And that's really where it gets kind of wonky. But I think in the same sense, going back to like the Brandolini's law of like 10 to 1 ratio required to ratio people that get things wrong. We have people in Congress right now that actually get it, that actually understand Bitcoin and crypto and understand what's necessary to have America be a positive force in the world and sort of be a magnet for crypto business or crypto exchanges or something like that. And obviously Senator Lummis is sort of like, she's the queen out in front with the torch, like leading us through the mm-hmm. caves of, you know, political idiocy or whatever, in the darkness of politics. She teased today that she has a bill coming out, which I was able to read a couple months ago. And it was really cool because it's something that when we were writing the book, at the end of the book, we said, hey, these are the things we're going to ask for. And then, so she took a lot of those things that we had and then added new things on it. And one of the big problems is this power struggle between different regulatory bodies and different elected and non-elected officials. So you have the House Financial Committee, Senate Financial Committee, the Banking Committee, you have natural resources, energy kind of vibe. You have the Treasury, the Fed, the SEC, the CFTC. And right now, the problem is that everybody is sort of like, It's like at a hard rock or a metal concert when the mosh pit is starting to form, you know, everyone's doing the circle, they're kind of pacing, and you know, you got Yellen and Gensler and Powell and, you know, all and the FinCEN people, and everyone's kind of getting ready to let it rip, and they're waiting for the big da-dun, da-dun, you know what I mean? And a lot of people in the market thought that this executive order was going to be that. They thought it was going to be like the war drums. The problem, I think, in a way, is that we don't have a true authority in that regard. So they're all as politicians do, they're all grasping for authority. And I think Lummis's bill is going to kind of put things in their place to say, hey, this portion of it can be guided by this, this portion of can be guided by this, because there is a big difference between a hardware provider and an exchange, right? There's a big difference between a wallet and a guy and a broker dealer, right? There's a big difference between a broker dealer and a guy paying for, you know, his t-shirts online, you know, with on the Lightning Network. So there's like this whole thing. It's a Wild West landscape. But if we get enough politicians sort of like understanding what Bitcoin and crypto can do, then hopefully we can have some sense, and then people put those things in buckets and we stop the mosh pit and the power struggle, because I think that's really the problem, is the fear of that power struggle, you know, ripping out and then turning the mosh pit into a riot. So that's kind of my hope. But also, you know, you and I have had a lot of politicians and aspiring congressional members and stuff like that on the show. We've talked to them individually a lot, and I think a lot of them have clarity questions, and I think Lummis's bill will have the clarity needed in order to get these people online so they can put it on their platform confidently, and then they can kind of go after how to make their state a better Bitcoin state and all those things.
Well, the other interesting thing too, and the midterms this year are going to be super important, because if Lummis is really the woman who's leading the charge and she's the flag bearer for the Senate, I really see Warren Davidson as that person in the House.
Absolutely.
And he is currently the, you know, he's the number two person on the Finance Committee, right? Mm-hmm. If the Republicans gain the House in midterms, that makes Davidson the senior most person on that committee. Mm. So, you know, I hate to really be rooting for one side or the other, but I think I'm rooting for the Republicans in the House to overturn the Democrats this time around. I, by the way, I also think it's good to have balance, you know, where, you know, the House is controlled by one party and the president is controlled by another party, you know, that generally brings good balance to politics. But I am rooting for a Republican takeover. I'm also rooting for Erica Rhodes to win in the primary as a Democrat. And we also have other really good Democrats as well that are running in the midterms and in the primaries that I'm rooting for that are good Bitcoiners. So,
I think you have these bright spots of people that are logical. You have people in Congress that really are mission-based, you know, that went there for a reason. They've stayed true to that reason. They want to make their state better. They want to bring jobs to their state, economic prosperity to their state. They want to improve the education system, things like that. I think in that regard, none of those things to me are partisan, you know? And in that same sense, like Bitcoin as it sits is not a partisan thing. It just happens to be that if the Democratic sort of agenda is a little bit more defined, because you have the president, the Senate, and the House Democrats all kind of on the same page to a degree, then they're busy with certain things, and the Republicans are less busy because they're sort of minimized on the committees. They're not leading those committees, so they're not having to drive the agenda. They don't have to put the gas pedal down.
Right.
So when you have Davidson or Lummis or, you know, Rand Paul or any of these other people that you would qualify as fiscally conservative, you know, regardless of any of the other politics, forget all the, you know, all the red and blue stuff. If you have a fiscally conservative person running a committee, then you can tell that they're going to prep, because it's really their chance to say, hey, this is what keeps us in line. And generally the reason why people are fiscally conservative is because they're long-term thinkers. They're not just thinking about this 2-year cycle or 4-year cycle or whatever. They're thinking, hey, if we write this bill, this infrastructure bill or something like that, this is going to affect us for decades, you know, the same way all these other ones have, the same way NAFTA and some of these other big things affected the country for decades. And I think that's where I think it's a little bit different. to say that it's not about anything other than merit and fiscally conservative ideology to say that Bitcoin can be a front and center issue. And in a way, for people that are moderates, to bring those moderates together on both sides of the aisle and they get them both into it. And I think it'll be cool because once Lummis's bill comes out, if I'm Taylor Burks or, you know, Adina Safta from North Carolina or Erica or Elizabeth Hang from Fresno, who I just met with recently, that's also a Bitcoiner. If you are running and you see a framework and now you can adjust your platform to that framework. And I think that's where it takes a lot of pressure off of you, because when you get a microphone put in your face, it's like, hey, I heard you're pro Bitcoin. And then you can kind of just take those talking points that someone else has put into a Senate bill as a senator. And then that's like a lot of skin off your back, or a lot of weight off your shoulders, you know?
Well, let's talk about the presidential order that just came out. That's pretty important because, you know, I know, Josh, you've been really, you know, you're a great technical analysis when it comes to trading. And it seems like what's happened is a lot of people were really afraid that this executive order was going to be very anti-Bitcoin, very anti-crypto, very anti, you know, all digital assets markets. And it seemed like we traded off ahead of it for weeks. And now that it's come out, everything's kind of spiked up. What are your takes on that, Josh?
Yeah, so I think everybody always expects the worst from government, which is certainly a reasonable take considering where we are today. But I really think this EO was written like weeks ago and it just delayed for whatever reason, because it didn't really include harsh language on like sanctions specifically. You know, it didn't say exchanges needed to bar these people for these reasons. It was more of like fact finding, and this is what we're going to be doing. And yeah, we're going to be doing a CBDC, which is going to be a disaster. But the other stuff in there is very, very tame and nothing new. So any clarity that we can get, because a lot of people are asking us about it. You know, what do you think is going to be in the EO, right? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't read the EO. but now it's out. There's no speculation. It's completely reasonable. Okay. I think you start there and say, look, this is just reasonable stuff. And it gives us a footing to start talking about this in a serious way that just wasn't there previously for the government, right? We're seeing all these people pop off about crypto in different ways. But this sort of sets the table and says, look, this is what we're going to do. It's completely fine, reasonable. I think anybody who reads this is going to say that. And yeah, of course we responded to that, but not only is,
I was gonna say the fear was so much worse than the reality, right? As yeah, it always I mean, is. I mean, yeah. Like I have the Kiyosaki, Robert Kiyosaki quote up here, which I think is so good. It all capitals, bye-bye Bitcoin. Prediction, Biden to sign executive order regulating cryptos. Next, Fed crypto. Next, all cryptocurrencies seized and folded into government crypto. And then he calls him a commie. This is kind of funny. But that's like, yeah, that it didn't. That's not the effect that happened, right? Like it was basically the fear was a lid, and now the lid's gone, and now we're seeing the kind of froth return back to the purchasing and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think especially on the back of the Russia Ukraine crisis going on, that people assumed that this is gonna be it. This is the nail in the coffin. This is really gonna get them. But no, it definitely wasn't the case. So yeah, we're reactionary off that. But oil today was down 18% in 12 hours. Okay. Wheat limit up for the past like week and a half. Nickel the other day went to infinity.
Yeah, that was wild.
On LME, London Metals Exchange, they're reversing those trades or something, right? Some nickel producer blew up because they were hedged. But not only, you know, we're trading in this range that's super volatile and crazy, but look at the rest of the world.
Well, so are we so tied together?
Oh, sorry, Zia. Let's talk specifically about some of the areas of the executive order. And, you know, there's a few, you know, a few bullet points that, you know, that came from the White House press secretary, right? Number one is protect U.S. consumers, investors, and businesses, right? And this area, you know, really what they're trying to do is safeguard against systematic risk posed by digital assets. That's fair, right? you know, there's really nothing there. I mean, just kind of doing your job, making sure that there's no fraud. Great. Protect U.S. and global financial stability and mitigate systematic risk. So they brought back in the systematic risk, but they're talking about, you know, the U.S.'s financial stability. That one's interesting, right? I mean, really what they're trying to do there is address any regulatory gaps. Okay, that makes sense. You know, what regulators do each of these areas fall under? Is it the SEC? Is it the CFTC? Is it property? And really all that is addressing and saying, yeah, we're going to investigate to see what this falls under, right? Where I think it should fall under and think it's going to fall under is, you know, Bitcoin's going to look like real estate, right? It's property. It's not a security. And you know, there's trade associations that kind of make sure that nobody's getting out of bounds and committing fraud. I mean, that's fair. If that's the way it goes. One of the other things that I thought was interesting was promote U.S. leadership in technology and economic competitiveness. To me, that's really interesting because that's what a certain states have been trying to do, like Wyoming and Texas specifically. And now Tennessee's doing it and Florida's doing it. And they're just saying, like, look, we want jobs coming to our state. We want diversification of our economy. You know, Texas is really going, you know, all in on the mining side. Tennessee and Wyoming are going after, you know, good corporate governance around companies on blockchain. Miami seems like they want to do it all. But you know, and having the U.S. be the leader here, that's I don't have a problem with that. You know, usually when you want to be the leader in something, you provide economic incentives so that you can be competitive against other countries in a specific area. I think that's great. So there's nothing here that's crazy. And I think what people were doing was looking at some of Elizabeth Warren's comments and saying, oh my God, you know, he's going to listen to Elizabeth Warren. And none of that really seems to be in here.
Yeah, I think like you said it best, there are so many different ways it can go because there's the states competition, the citizens are competing to move to the states that serve them best, back to the self-interest thing, like we talked about Smith's laws. And, you know, really, the states are taking the lead on this and proving that the thesis of attracting Bitcoiners is good for your, is good. They're, like, Texas is not losing out, and Florida's not losing out, and Tennessee's not losing out, and Pennsylvania, with their Bitcoin mining stuff that they have, and natural gas in Wyoming, none of those places are losing out. So they're like, okay, well, we got about 7 or 8 states that are actually benefiting from Bitcoin, you know, and just recruiting crypto people and recruiting crypto exchanges and stuff. So Ohio is another one of those. So why wouldn't America do it? I mean, that's the whole idea. Like, let's make America the best place to be a crypto person in the world instead of losing people, even if it's just on paper, to Portugal or Puerto Rico or something like that, you know? So I'm with you. I don't feel bearish at all because of the executive order.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this reads to me like the right lobbyists got to the right people to do the right influencing here, certainly. And over the past, 6 months, we've had hearing after hearing in Congress about stablecoins in the House and the Senate, banking. And as I'm listening to these day after day, I'm thinking, wow, these senators and representatives are getting more and more informed about this stuff. It's getting too big to ignore in a lot of states for a lot of reasons, like you've laid out. And this is finally starting to provide clarity, like we keep saying. But
yeah, we might just actually cross the chasm, you know, of education and get that critical mass of that base layer of education, so people know the difference between this and this, this and this, and they kind of have a lay of the land. So then they can actually go in there with eyes open instead of just like fumbling through notes on their way. Like, oh, wait, hang on. Somebody lost money. Mt. Gox, you know, and then they just don't know anything going. That's how it was two or three years ago, for sure.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear like senators complain about like Super Bowl commercials and then senators talking about Ukraine and Russia in like this financial escape hatch for people against the ruble, for example, right? Just like night and day with some of these representatives.
Yeah. Well, one thing that, you know, I want to point out that's interesting here too is, you know, I always keep talking about Tennessee because this is where our headquarters is. And, but what's happening in Tennessee, Tennessee is a very Republican state. But what's interesting is at the state level, the person that's leading the charge to make Tennessee, I would say, similar to Wyoming as far as benefits and structure, as far as legal structure goes, is actually a Democrat by the name of Jason Powell. And, you know, there's a group of us, business owners and operators that are working with him. And, he's getting bipartisan support to push this forward at the state level. So it's just great that it's not just one party. It's both parties that are, you know, really active here, that really want economic incentive that, for their constituents. So, you know, I think, you know, anything we can do to support these guys, we should.
All right. So Steven, I know you have a hard stop coming up. You gotta hop on because you're a man of many talents and many, many hats. You just happen to be wearing a really cool Valkyrie swag hat. So I guess I will see you in a couple of weeks at Miami 22, right? You'll be there.
Can't wait to see you guys.
It'll be great. In the meantime, I'm going to start working out. I'm going to get my beach bod ready, you know, cause I might not be as tall as the rest of the Valkyrie team, but if I can hang, cause I'm fit, at least I got that going for me.
You know, here's the problem, CJ, two weeks of working out, it's not going to get you to where I am.
I love it.
It'll take years, bro.
Hey, I made a brisket the other day and I ate about 7 pounds of it. So I think I'm on a good program right now of carnivory and office work, but I need to fight that. I need to fight that office work entropy and get that beach body going.
Awesome. So, yeah. I can't wait for us all to be together in a couple of weeks.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you for joining us as well. And for your insight into the executive order. I think it's like, as always, there are so many different angles to Bitcoin. And one of the cool things is being able to talk to people that are doing the research and digging in. And it's not a part-time job, I guess, if you're really a crypto guy, a Bitcoiner. So I just want to say thank you to both of you guys for another cool episode of the Bitcoin Bottom Line. And as always to the listeners, this is not financial advice, but we are telling you to get involved with your local politicians if you so desire. And there are definitely lots of benefits to that if you're a crypto person and you want your local rep to be a crypto person as well. So I guess thank you for joining us on the Bitcoin Bottom Line, and we will see you soon.